As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 17,
Episode 48. This is Writing Excuses. Bodies, why? Part 3.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
Ow.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Chelsea.
I'm Fran.
I'm Howard.
All right. And for this episode, what we're going to be looking at is we're going to be talking about pain. We're going to be talking about how journeying with pain is awful and also some of the metaphors that we can use to kind of approach writing about pain. And let's dive into that. Fran, do you want to unpack that a little bit more for our listeners?
Definitely. I find writing about or expressing pain to others really difficult, in part because, one, when you do that online, quite often people want to talk to you about their pain, and it becomes sort of an echo chamber of pain, which I really do care about other people, and I wish that no one was in pain, but I also need to do my work. And this can become sort of a never-ending cycle. I'm not here to educate people about pain. I have had that question asked of me of, you know, don't you want other people to understand where you're coming from? No, I want to write stories. That's what I want to do. So talking about disability in this whole series has been kind of tough for me in that, but it's also important. And so some of the times, the ways in which I do this are I create a structure within which I can discuss elements of pain or the interactions with the medical community that I've been having since I was one. And that was clearly lettered in a mostly steady hand, definitely did that in a way that was, for me, a vehicle to, I thought, initially unpack those different rooms of experience. And it turned out to be the most angry thing I have ever written in my life, which was another aspect of pain that I didn't realize was there. And fantasy, the dragon or the robot or the spaceship element, actually gives me a metaphor to start examining things that otherwise are very direct and very real. So that I find super helpful. I know other people have very different experiences because this is not a one-size-fits-all topic. So, you know, huge, big pointy arrows around your mileage may vary. Your pain scale may vary.
My,
Let
us absolutely get you started on the pain scale.
My, but arguably the most important thing I've written is No, I'm Fine, which I wrote for an anthology to benefit my friend Robison Wells. And it's about 750 words of creative nonfiction in which I, in first person, walk the reader through my brain not working correctly. Me not wanting to take a pill, even though I know the pill is going to help me. And the process of writing that, I wrote it during a family vacation. Sandra took the kids off to go see some rocks. We're in Utah. They're nice rocks. And I stayed home and wrote. And she came home, and her first words to me were like, "Oh my gosh, what happened? Are you okay?" And I realized I'm not okay, because in order to write this correctly, apparently I wrote it so well I walked myself through it. Mm-hmm. It was powerful. It was a learning experience for me. And I say most important thing I've written because it's the only thing I've written where people have come up to me and said, "Howard, I think you saved my life because I shared this with my wife and now she understands what's happening to me." And I'm not reflecting this at Fran. You know, I'm not here to educate people. I just want to write nice stories, but every so often I just got to lay down the education, because if people don't have the words to describe the pain that they're having, then nobody can help.
Let me rephrase. This is this particular conversation where I was asked, "Don't you want to help people understand?" was really directed more towards me answering specific questions on an individual basis, which brings up the sort of, I have expressed myself on social media. Now everyone on social media wants me to interact on an individual level with them, which, hi, social media, I love you, you're awesome, but also I want to write. And my answer to this person was, I do education. I do write about things that are important to me, but I do it in fiction. And I don't necessarily want to spend the time educating individuals when Google exists, among other things. So yes, educating. Yes, creating spaces where other people can empathize and find themselves in those stories. Yes, absolutely. Burning up my time and my energy to do something that the person could easily do for themselves, not so much.
Yeah, I'm not going to write that essay again and again and again and again for everybody who asks me what it's like to have my brain.
Right.
I want to write it once.
And this is one of the reasons that sometimes writing about bodies as not, literally not human, can sometimes allow us to give people another way in that sometimes feels safer for the writer as much as anything else. So just as a, you know, on the pain scale end of that, I've been a puppeteer for most of my adult life. And my pain scale is set so that I think, would I perform with this? And the answer is, well, yeah, you know, I performed Little Shop, and the thought that I often had when I was working this massive puppet was, if I experienced this pain outside of this puppet, I would go to the emergency room. But when I do experience that level of pain outside the puppet, I don't. What I do is I keep teaching until we realize that actually, the pain that I thought was just fairly normal was shingles. So when I am trying to put that into fiction and trying to explain those levels of pain, I often turn to other forms of talking about it, whether it's like putting a character into a spaceship where the spaceship itself is malfunctioning and that reflects the body. What are some other things that either Chelsea or you, Fran, have have seen done well or used as ways to create this emotional distance for yourself as a writer?
I am happy to kick that to Chelsea first. I have some thoughts.
Well, I'm trying to think about this. One of the things that really kind of rivets me to somebody's story is when I read about like their experience with like a disability that they have in common with me, is that I'm kind of like pointing my fingers at my eyes and pointing those fingers at them. It's like, I see you. And I know a lot of people do this because when I was done writing Witchmark, I had several people come up to me and say, me too, I have PTSD too. And the way you wrote about it was so great because it wasn't like an after school special about PTSD. It was, you know, Miles had this experience and he's toughing it out through that. And honestly, I didn't really realize how much of that experience I had woven into the story because I was just like, okay, well, Miles' experience is like mine, so I'm just going to do it the way I would do it. And that, again, makes me want to circle back to the pain scale for a second because I have years of toughing it out with pain. So if I go to a doctor and they say, what's your pain level? And I say, oh, well, you know, I'm pretty uncomfortable right now. I'm actually talking about an 8, but the doctor doesn't know that because they don't know that I've been like living my life at 5 for literally years.
Two things about the pain scale, because I put things at low numbers because I'm, you know, constantly in pain, but I'm also living in kind of an orchestra of pain. For a long time, I knew how to draw because of where the pain in my hands was. And figuring out how to express pain on a single linear line of weird faces really doesn't match up to my experience at all. First of all, it defines pain as a one thing that is happening to you instead of a multitude of things happening all at the same time on different levels. And two, it expresses it on a single unvariable situation, whereas, you know, pain's so hard to get conveyed to another person who hasn't experienced it. And at one point I was, you know, your brain is going, say seven, but what comes out is, oh, it's a 4. And then I have to say, but when I had kidney stones, that was also a 4. And that usually gets me an interesting reaction from people.
I imagine so.
But it puts it on a parallel that they understand, especially if they've had kidney stones. Pain is a relative experience that is the worst thing to share with other people. We can share experiences like food. That's a universal experience. Breathing is a universal experience. Pain is an individualized experience that is so tied to all of our other ideals for ourselves and each other and choice and all sorts of things that we have to work through. And when I see pain or disability, for that matter, written about well, it is usually in terms that are relative and that are cumulative. So it's not just a single thing that is a character definition. I think this goes back to way in the beginning of this where I mentioned that, you know, somebody on a panel had said, well, I'd make a hero unlikely by giving them a disability. This is not something that you just like drop on somebody as like, here's your disability sticker. It's an actual layering of experiences and things and ways to maneuver around stuff and ways to get the thing you want to do done while in pain without, you know, biting somebody's head off while you're in pain. And that's the other thing that I love. And, like Elizabeth Baer does this really well with her, Chelsea, what's the space station series one where that they're navigating pain and elements of different types of disabilities, while in space, while working as, you know, security and medical systems. And I'm going to come up with the name of the book in a minute.
Are you talking about White Space?
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. There are so many different aspects that are really well portrayed in layers. Elliot de Baudard does an amazing job of talking about emotional and physical pain, especially in The Tea Master and The Detective, where she's got, you know, her Holmes character is physically just, you know, it's really incredible. So I really appreciate when writers use layers, when there is no magical fix, when you just need to get through the day in different ways. Those are really, really brilliant things. And you can often just kind of like, you can tell whether an author is a coffee drinker or a tea drinker by what their character drinks. You can often tell if somebody has been through an experience of at least empathizing with someone else's pain or their own pain, because you have to empathize with yourself too, by how it comes across on the page. If it is just this one thing that is, you know, happening where nothing else is also happening, that's a little bit harder for me to believe.
Yeah.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Making your mental health a priority is always a challenge. And I think it's easy to not prioritize it, especially when you're trying to figure out how to write a book. I think we have some deep cultural idea that artists should be tortured and depressed to make their best work. But in my experience, struggling to find clarity and motivation will hurt your process a lot more than help it. In my own life, therapy has been essential to figuring out how to navigate an industry seemingly designed to give all of us anxiety. Being able to talk to an expert can help you set better boundaries, find a balance between the demands of your work and your art, and navigate the complexities of being a published writer. That said, finding a therapist is never easy, especially if you're not in a major city like I am. That's where a service like BetterHelp can be of use to help you start the process while you figure out what your needs are for your mental health journey. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/WX today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/WX.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Why don't we, since we've just had two great recommendations, why don't we actually pause for our book of the week, which is neither of those two. It is a short story, but we also recommend both of the ones previously mentioned. It's a short story by John Wiswell called DIY. You want to say why you wanted to recommend that one this week?
I love this story. This is up at Tor.com, and these characters feel real and they feel so innovative on the page as far as how they're going about solving problems, but also how they're dealing with people who are not them. John projects empathy in all, everything he writes. And this is one of those that just really, really got to me in all the best of ways.
So that's DIY by John Wiswell, and we are linking to it in the liner notes, so you can hop to it since it is available online. So one of the things that I found when I was doing some research for The Spare Man was that this idea of pain. My character has a deep brain pain suppressor, and it's one of those devices that is about to become not science fiction. But the problem that they have is that people's pain is so specific that running clinical trials on pain suppressors is incredibly difficult because no one's pain is the same. And also because of this pain scale that we're talking about. So it's one of those things that technically there is actually a way to suppress pain in the brain, but practically speaking, they are running into serious, serious problems figuring it out, which then means that when you're trying to convey that to the reader, this pain, that actually writing it in a way that the reader feels it in their own body becomes very challenging. Something that Stephen King suggested in his own writing is that if you want people to feel pain, that rather than trying to tell them what the pain feels like, that you just describe what has happened to them and let them, instead of trying to describe what it feels like to have your toenails pulled out, you just say that they pulled out the toenails. And everyone's like, ugh. And that one works. That one makes sense because all of us have had some damage to fingernail or toenails. But many of the pieces of pain that someone who's dealing with a disability or chronic pain that is so specific to them, and it is not something that people without that particular body shaping are going to experience. So some of the tools that I've deployed are to give my characters an almost synesthesia experience of pain, where I start describing it with colors or textures. I realized that even when I was talking with someone else, that even describing sharp pain versus dull pain is a metaphor for something that is happening in your body.
As a kid, I say as a kid, between the ages of 16 and 30, when I described pain, when I described it to myself, it was colors and shapes. You know, orange triangle, gray square, gray triangle, red circle were all different kinds of pain. This is fundamentally useless when you're trying to communicate with a physician and they're asking how bad is the pain. I said, well, it's a big orange triangle. Okay, where's the triangle? In looking at the pain scales that physicians use, I quickly realized that it was a tool that was not only going to help me, you know, when I go to the doctor increasingly as I age, but when I write, because one of these scales talks about how much the pain interferes with other things I'm trying to do. You know, zero is no pain. One, hardly notice. Two, notice, but it doesn't interfere. Okay? Mm-hmm. A lot of us who have chronic pain have managed to take our pain and push it down to two and tell ourselves that it doesn't interfere when, in fact, it probably does interfere. But that's another discussion. And then you jump up to eight, awful, hard to do anything. Nine, can't bear the pain, unable to do anything. And 10 on one of the scales, 10 was the patient shouldn't be able to report a 10 because if the patient is experiencing a 10, the patient is not able to say the word 10. And on that scale for me, I realized, oh, I've had a 9.5. And that was when I got a shot in my foot and it hit the nerve and everything shut down except that sensation. Briefly.
I would just like to point out that pain scales contain inherent bias as far as medication goes. Pain relief medication, especially if you are female, especially if you are from a marginalized group, especially if you are a Black woman and you express your pain according to those pain scales, they will automatically ratchet it down. And it's hideous to me that assumption is made. And I think that, again, medical model, but also there's no empathy there, the lack of empathy in those things.
Well, but circling back to what I can write, idea that a character is feeling the pain and it is interfering with what else they want to do, that's a plot point. I can write that.
That's great. One other thing for writers to think about is that the length of your sentences and the sounds of your words when a character is in pain can be impactful and useful. If you have a character who speaks in long flowing sibilant sentences that have a lot of S's in them, and suddenly everything they're speaking with is stabbing or uses a lot of K's or hard sounds and T's in them, you with punctuation, every single word or dashes or however you're just breaking up the lines conveys a lot more than you think it does.
Yeah.
Studying poetry will help.
Well, I was going to use the Bukowski example, which is that Charles Bukowski had emphysema, and when as he progressed in his writing, his lines got shorter.
Oh, that's fascinating and unsurprising. The other tool that tool and challenge I find is that when you have a character that has chronic pain, it is part of their normal. So keeping it alive on the page so that the reader remembers that, because otherwise the reader will default to their own, which is, as we've discussed, not matching, since nobody's pain matches. So it's a challenge to both keep it alive for the reader, not have the character be whiny for the reader, whiny, and not have the character think about the pain more than they naturally would. And one of the ways that I found to handle that, and I'd be curious to know if anyone has different techniques, is to highlight the adaptations that the character has to make. So, only mention the pain when one of those adaptations fails. So, like, I was talking about this previously, that I have a lower back thing that I had kind of forgotten that I have it, because it's a puppet injury that I've had for so long that I manage it. But like when I get down, I'm very often touching something as I go down to make sure that my balance stays correct. You know, I will crouch with a straight back. And so making sure that my character was crouching with a straight back, putting her hand on something to brace as she was getting up, mentioning those things, and then the moments where she does something that she shouldn't do, like getting up and turning at the same time, which is one of the failure modes. So trying to do those things was one of the ways that I found to keep my character's pain alive on the page without having it while keeping it in proportion to the way to her lived experience. Does anyone else have other tools that they can recommend?
Describing the modes of compensation is a critical piece for me. We talk a lot about how a scene, you want to describe it using multiple senses, you know, sight, sound, touch, smell, whatever. Describing a scene and describing that, you know, I reach out with my hand to steady myself, or, you know, I pause for a moment to take inventory about, you know, what it is that is hurting. How does my knee feel? Am I ready for these stairs? Yeah, I'm ready for these stairs. And it's just a momentary thought, and then down the stairs. Writing those things in as in the same way that I write multiple senses when describing a scene.
So let's segue from that straight into our homework assignment.
Oh, goody. That's me.
Which is yours.
Okay. Earlier I mentioned the No, I'm Fine essay that I wrote. I have an assignment for you. Creative nonfiction, describes the wrong word. Write a story about the worst, or some of the worst, or very bad, you pick, pain that you have experienced. Use as many senses as you can. Paint the whole picture for us. Write it in such a way that you are evoking the pain and the emotion and the setting and the context and that whole experience for the reader. Doesn't have to be long. Between 250 and 1,000 words is probably enough for one really juicy pain.
All right. This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write. For this episode of Writing Excuses, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, C.L. Polk, Fran Wild, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Daniel Thompson and mastered by Alex Jackson.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.